Hello, I'm Mark Lowen. Welcome to The Documentary from the BBC World Service. In BBC OS Conversations, we bring people together to share their experiences. This time, it's conversations on the aftermath of the Valencia floods. More than 2 weeks on, and streets are still being cleared of mud and debris after the disaster that killed more than 220 people. In our conversations, one family describes the search for their father, and we meet three rescue volunteers angry that the authorities have not been doing enough.
We feel abandoned, we feel insecure, our heads can just not understand this. Because if civilians are able to do it with their two pair of hands and with a broom, how come there's no organisation at those levels?
The forecast on the 29th of October warned of rain along the Valencia region of Spain's Mediterranean coast. But for many people, an official warning of severe weather came far too late. By the time government leaders had issued an alert directly to people's phones, the flash floods were already causing enormous damage. In one of the worst affected towns, Paiporta, where at least 60 people died, waves of water swept cars and people along the streets, flooding buildings in minutes. In the aftermath of the disaster, I was sent to cover the story for the BBC. I've never seen that level of devastation from weather. It was like a bomb had been dropped from the air, destroying everything in its wake. Cars crushed, houses flooded, entire neighbourhoods caked in mud. These are some of the things people had to say to my colleague Ikra Farouk, who travelled out to the region with me.
The people start screaming, the water is coming, and
I'm very scared, please come here, and then lights turn off.
We were submerged in water, and we can never have imagined this travesty. I got out first, out of the three brothers, because I had a car ready to go. And I wanted to get the car out and not let it get submerged in case there was an ambulance or something, not to get in the way. My brother, the other brother, got his car and did the same thing. We left the town to look for a site to park it, and he had an accident with his car. He is in hospital with a broken leg. He was operated on, but he's fine, thank God. My other brother was lagging behind a bit when the water was rising. Already, it had really raised up, and he was there trying to save himself when a rush of water came and he died.
I was in my computer to do some things, and I'm hearing the people screaming, no? Wow, 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 wow. And then the river comes and comes, and a lot of cars floating, cars with people inside.
And the water came into here as well.
It is.
This is your corridor up in the hallway up until to get to your flat. So how far did it come up here? 2 meters.
2 meters. 2 meters. 2 meters. Ten centimeters. I was in the town the day after and 2 days after. I see three police stay in the floor saying everything. Okay, we don't have mobiles. We don't have cars. We don't have nothing. We can do nothing, and the government doing nothing. You call the police and nobody answers you because the light turn off, and we are in communicate 24 hours to 48 hours without light, without telephone signal. Was horrible, horrible, horrible.
I don't know what the police is doing right now, because if you see them, they are clean, they are not dirty.
I mean, you said that they seem clean and the emergency vehicles are right beside us right now. Have they said anything? Have they asked if you needed anything?
No. But the people that comes from Valencia, the normal people, every 5 minutes come here to say, do you need something? Do you need food? Do you need water? I think the people is doing better job than the emergency system.
I've never seen this before, and it's like war. And Spain is one of the most, you know, it's powerful country, and it's sad. And it's been, you know, it's a small country, and seeing this from people that, you know, wasn't expecting anything, and out of a sudden they were coming back to work, and they were in the middle of a disaster. I've heard a lot of messages from family saying the last goodbye, and see, it's hard.
You get a sense from those voices there of both the shocking impact of the floods, but also how people feel the authorities have responded, and we'll talk more about that later on. We recorded our first conversation with two families earlier this week, exactly a fortnight after the disaster. My colleague Luke Jones brought together brother and sister Samuel and Nerea. Their father died in the floods. And first, Carmen. Her mother's house was severely damaged.
In the afternoon of the 29th, we were just, you know, joking. My mom, my sister, who lives in Valencia City Center, and I, in our WhatsApp group, I mean, not joking, but just like, oh, have you seen the, you know, the images of like Requena and Utiel and all like this rain? And we were just like, what's going on? And then literally in 10 minutes, my mom is texting us. Our living room is completely flooded and she only has time to grab her phone and go to the second floor of our house. Thank God that we have a second floor. And then we lost mobile connection, so we couldn't talk to her until Wednesday at 10 p.m. So it was almost a day without being able to talk to her. The only news were that she was rescued by a firefighter who called us. But that's all we knew for more than 24 hours. Mm-hmm. I didn't know anything about her emotional or physical state.
And when you actually got to see her, how has she fared?
It's very weird just to talk to her and just to like spend time with her because she's just suffering a very strong post-traumatic disorder. My mom is unable to do simple tasks. Mm-hmm. And I've already told her that she needs to go to, you know, a therapist. She keeps telling us about the noises. She says, Carmen, the noise of the water, the energy of the water, the noise of the cars smashing into the walls, the noise of people shouting for help. And then all of a sudden, you don't hear those people anymore. A lot of people talk about the noise and she's totally traumatized by all the noises at the night.
And Samuel and Nerea, tell me about the period of time where your father went missing. He was a truck driver, is that right?
Yeah, he was a trucker. He was on his way to his client facilities. The water level had already risen by a meter and had damaged the truck's ventilation, causing the vehicle to stop. He called his client and he explained the situation. And the client told him not to continue on his way as it was not safe. So my father immediately abandoned the truck, seeing that the water level kept rising. He took his documents and his mobile phone, which he never answered again. From that moment on, he was missing until we found him deceased the 2nd of November.
Which is quite a sort of a few days after all of this first happened, isn't it? What was that period of time like?
In my view, it's the worst thing that can happen to a person, you know? When a person is missing and you are waiting for news. Finally, when we found our father, I feel relief. I was not sad because at least we can say goodbye to our father because there are still missing people.
As my sister explains, from the first moment I was able to reach Valencia, I tried to access the zone where the truck was seen last time, but it wasn't possible. In the first 2 days after my father was missing, there was no chance of getting there with any vehicle possible. Only helicopters or drones could fly over the area, but they didn't see anything. Only 3 days after my father was missing, I was able, with a lot of people who helped me, to access the zone and start looking for him in the area where the truck was stuck.
And do you mind me asking, how was he actually found in the end? I mean, how did that news come?
At that time, I realized the chance of finding our father alive was really, really little, much more little than we hoped, we thought. We spent the whole day moving all the vegetation washed away by water with a lot of care from all the firefighters, from the army, from the police officers and civil guards. But we didn't find anything that day. But the next day, on the 2nd of November, Saturday, we kept going on. And yes, we found him like a kilometer away from the truck.
Were you there, Samuel, when that happened?
It was, yes, of course, the worst moment. Yes, at the same time, the worst moment of my life. But at the same time, as my sister explained, some kind of relief.
I'm so sorry for you guys, Samuel and Nerea. Lo siento mucho. like, I'm lost for words. You know, I feel very lucky that my mom and all my family and friends, we are okay. We're, you know, traumatized. We lost our memories, our things, our stuff, but just losing somebody, losing your father. You know, I lost my father 20 years ago because, of course, another reason. But this is just one of the most painful things that Nerea and Samuel and the rest of their family will experience. And just due to climate change, due to incompetency of our political, regional political parties and central political parties, that they didn't tell us beforehand, hey, this is going to happen. Don't take your vehicles. Don't go to work. Don't go on your trucks. Because I'm sure Nerea and Samuel feel that their father could be alive if things were have been made in different in a different way from, you know, the government.
Samuel, how has all of this affected you? Going through all of that, being part of the search effort, actually being there when your father was found dead in those circumstances, I mean, that must have had quite the impact on your mental health. I mean, you must be traumatized.
Yeah, I can only tell I thought that wasn't happening to me at the moment. I was acting by impulse, but I wasn't aware of what was happening. I think with time I will know I was there and what was happening, but at the time there were so many firefighters, civil guards, army and police officers, the mechanics of my father, my uncle who helped me on the field to find him, that I only could keep going on. But of course, the first day I arrived there, I found the truck and I listened how the police officers talked to me, talk between each other. I realized that that was the hardest time. Then I was ready for what was going to happen. And at the time we found him, it was 10, 15, half an hour, 15 minutes, 30 minutes. I can't explain, but after that, some kind of relief. It's hard to say it, because our father was a really experimented driver. He was in good shape, physical shape, and he had escaped so many accidents, so many situations. And I will take memories and take care of what has happened with time. I can only tell this.
Samuel, his sister Nerea, and you also heard from Carmen. And thank you to them for sharing their experiences, and we wish them and their families all the best. I'm Mark Lowen, and you're listening to BBC OS Conversations on the aftermath of the Valencia floods. One of the issues we heard on the ground was that it wasn't actually raining badly in some of the worst-hit places. Torrential downpours were often in neighbouring areas, but then rivers burst their banks, with mud and water cascading downhill into places like Paiporta. So people there were taken by surprise. And while some went down to garages to move their cars, they were trapped as the water rose. Likely made worse by climate change, the floods are the worst natural disaster in living memory in Spain, and recriminations are flying over who is to blame. Valencia regional leader Carlos Mazón has become a figure of hate for taking around 12 hours to respond to the red weather warning by Spain's National Meteorological Office, and for being slow to request enough military support to assist in the rescue effort. But the national Spanish government has also come under attack. When King Felipe, Prime Minister Pedro Sánchez and Carlos Mazón visited Paiporta the weekend after the floods, I watched in astonishment as crowds threw mud and jeered at them, calling them murderers. When I visited the area, the volunteer effort was breathtaking to witness. I saw thousands of people from across Spain bringing food and water, helping to clear the streets and search for the missing. The government also sent in thousands of soldiers in the country's biggest ever peacetime deployment, but they were slow to arrive and still too few, so volunteers filled the vacuum. A week after the floods had subsided, and after I'd returned to our studios here in London, we brought together three of those volunteers doing what they could to help. Monica and Marie are in Valencia City, and first, Carol. She's been volunteering with the animal rescue effort.
A woman once called me crying that she lost everything, her house, her car, her job, and that she'd had also lost her dog, and that was the only thing left she had, and if we could please find him. From our rescue teams, I've heard a lot of stories. The one that has really stuck on me was the rescue team that went to Masanasa, which is a town that has been very affected. And there was a woman that called them asking for help. She was trapped in her house with a dog. She didn't have many food supplies, and also her husband was dead inside of the house too. So the rescue team got into the house. They did rescue the dog. They told the woman to come with them, that they were going to get her into the nearest hospital. But the woman said that she didn't want to leave her husband behind. And they gave her food, water. They told the police that she was staying there. And that's all we know since then.
Yeah, so from my side, news of friends passing, relatives that nearly died but survived, with absolute horrendous stories, being stuck in cars, in garages with water until their chins, pictures of people missing to be found so that we can share them on social media. And it has been absolute chaos since then. It's like a war zone. There's silence in the streets. You don't know what's beneath the mud. And the worst part is that you get there and there's no one specialized, no firemen, no, just volunteers with brooms, which just, you know, it's shocking. Like, we're in Spain. This is not an underdeveloped country. We've got the resources, we've got the machinery, we've got the military, and they were not sent. They were not sent on time to help all of those lives that could have been saved.
Yesterday, we went to Masanasa as well. And I can subscribe to everything that has been previously said, because what I saw yesterday, or rather the group of 20 people that we were, there were three adolescents that came to help. And I think that just speaks for itself, that even adolescents are there to help, while military people, while people who are equipped, who are trained to help, are not there. And the situation is dire. There is a dire need in help, professional help, rather, right? Therefore, because we don't have any, that is why people are there. And they will be coming, because the destruction is devastating. And I don't think that it's a matter of a week, neither 2 weeks. Therefore, I think that it's, of course, not volunteers that we need, but the volunteers will be there, and I will be there, and I'm sure that Carol and Monica will be there as well, because if it's not for the people who are doing it, I don't know who else is there to help.
How do you all feel about the local authorities' handling of this, or mishandling of this?
Oh, that's
I just don't even have words for it. I mean, I just can't even describe what I feel personally.
We cannot understand it. We just cannot understand how, like, honestly, if 15,000 volunteers were able to organize themselves to go and help, we just don't understand how, you know, the institutions, with the technology nowadays, with the resources that we have, with the, you know, there's literally no leadership, no organization. We feel like, I feel insecure. I feel that, like, I haven't been affected, but it's, you think that you live in a developed country, European country, with your healthcare that we presume about, that we've got all of this great social security, and then this happens, and we're literally like in a third world country without resources. So imagine, I think that the frustration from everyone comes from, it's not that we don't have the resources, we have them, and we haven't used them on time, and there's kind of political argument going on when people are dying. So the frustration is incredible. We feel abandoned. We feel insecure. We feel our heads can just not understand this. Because if civilians are able to do it with their two pair of hands and with a broom, how come there's no organization at those levels? So a lot of frustration against politics. I'm sure that you saw the images of when the president came over to the sites, when the king and queen came over. There's just this sense of insecurity and hate and rage and loads of emotions accumulated.
Yeah, I generally feel angry, because it is frustrating indeed, because it is scary indeed. How come I should try to do everything that Monica has just verbalized, right? But From my part, it's the anger that needs to be recycled into something productive. We have to claim our rights for a government that would do a much better job. And I feel generally very, very angry.
Seeing people going through the vehicles, shouting the names of their missed ones, it's just heartbreaking. They're trying to find their relatives amongst this pile of vehicles. So yeah, there are thousands of horrible stories, and it's not just this people that have got lost their relatives. They're now stuck in mud, trying to clean their houses. So imagine they've got this tragic situation that happened. They lost someone, but now they're still physically and mentally. It is so tiring to have to walk in the mud, get construction material, trying to clean your house, and feeling that no one came through. Like, I've been to the site 3 days now, and I went to the same first house that I had gone the first day, and I asked, is there anyone that came? They said no. It's just been 4 or 5 different groups of volunteers that are giving us food, that are listening to us, that are helping us to clean. It's just nonsense.
It is so tragic to hear all of this and to have seen on the ground, you know, I was there for just 3 or 4 days, and just seeing, getting a glimpse of what you guys are going through. How psychologically are you processing all of this?
I'm going to speak for myself. I am privileged to be here right now and talk to all of you. However, I'm feeling it's nothing in comparison to how people who have lost their loved ones, who have lost their homes, who have lost their little businesses there. It's nothing. It's literally nothing, right? So it's the feeling of numbness that, you know, can just carry on without feeling anything. So, for example, yesterday I came back home from spending the entire day there in Massanassa cleaning the debris and etc. And then you come back home to your shower and to your bed and you feel nothing, right? And I went with a friend of mine and she told me the same thing. It's just, okay, so here we go, right? We have been approached by people who were crying desperately, right? And a friend of mine, she saw a woman and she thanked her for the help. And then you can just say, well, yes, sure, of course, we are here to help. And then it's all like a dream, naturally, right? So it's the trauma of witnessing that will kick on later on. That is why we really, those of us who are helping, we have to take care of our mental health, even though it is a privileged position to even be thinking about this, you know what I'm saying? But I think it is through the collective action that we can feel better.
Marie, Monica and Carol, who have been giving up their time to help people affected by the flooding in Valencia. I'm Mark Lowen, and you've been listening to The Documentary from the BBC World Service.